What made you first begin to think about getting a defense job?
I wasn't thinking about getting a defense job. I was here in Hawaiian Gardens. Jenny Bandonado, a girl that I knew for many years, we went to school together. I think we studied in school in Llewellyn, I think in the first grade. We were very, very good friends. And she said, I'm going home for a job. I said, oh, I said, okay. You come on with me, so I won't walk by myself. I told my mother, she said, where are you going? I'm going with Jenny. I said, well, she's going home for a job. I said, I don't want no job right now. I said, I'm resting. I said, I'll go with her. So we walked to Lakewood and Carson. And they were just barely decided to build the plant. They weren't even building the plant yet. They used to be a city dump. So every morning my dad would get up and say, I wonder why they're cleaning that place up. And why are they cleaning? I said, I don't know, but I got a job. I can go. And what you going to do? I'm going to Los Angeles to work. Los Angeles? Yeah, I said, we're going over here and put an application. They say it's Douglas. And then they need parachutes. I think that's what they are. I said parachutes and upholstery, like the upholstery of the seats and the cushions.
Was it an employment office that you
No, they had a little, just a little shack, a little building. Mm-hmm. Just one little room, like a real estate.
And this was in 1940? Is that?
Uh-huh. So, we got the job. Cherney said, no, we got the job. How are we going to get to Los Angeles? We're going to walk. I said, what else can we do? We came home, and Jenny came back and says, you know what, my brother says, he's going to help us pay at the fair to Los Angeles to find about the job and see if it's a decent job. He's going to go with us, she said. And if it's a decent place, he's going to let us work. I said, good. I asked permission, because I always ask permission if I've got a divorce. So I said, okay, go on. So Jenny and Mike and I went. We went on the streetcar. We got to Figueroa Street. And Figueroa, he said, boy, looking at the place, it was a dump at that time. It was just little roads. It was not the place. Great big building. And then you girls think you can walk over here from the depot? I don't know, get the job, we will. And we went in there. It had a lot of machines. Some had three-needle machine, four-needle machine. The four needles were for the parachutes.
These are sewing machines.
Uh-huh. Power machine, whatever. They're not like the ones that are here nowadays. So we got the job. The first thing I learned how to do was they showed me how to use the machine, how to clean it up, all what the material you use to clean it up, because they were very particular. And then we had to clean it up real good and put a piece of material on the floor so the material that would hit the floor wouldn't get dirty. So then I made a little cushion. That's how they showed me the first machine, which is a two-needle machine. And before you knew it, I just got graded up the line. So I started making parachutes. And they always tried to keep me because they said I was fast on my hand. So then they finished building Douglas. But Santa Monica was the one that had just been open. The men were working, no women, men.
In the parachute place, were there men working?
No, just women. We had supervisors was men, but not women. And then we went to work at Santa Monica. And then when we got to Santa Monica, I told Jenny, I said, no, we're not going to say, how are we going to get to the plant over here? She says, you know, since my brother's got a Model T. We'll pay him. I said, we don't even have a penny. I said, we're going to pay him. Anyway, he decided to help us. So he took us. He would take us for all of us. For 2 weeks he took us. And to Santa Monica. Then they finished building this plant. Then Jenny. First, before, when the first one hired, they looked at my hands and they said my hands were mechanical hands. Yeah. I said, what do you mean by mechanical hands? He said, well, your hands are not too big or they're not too small. At that time, my hands were not. The reason I had these knuckles because packing tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'll go to school, whatever. No, he said, well, you don't even have to go to school. So you can go down the line.
Now, when you were at Santa Monica, did
this little old man that showed me all these tricks mm-hmm. came back to work here as a lead. And he kept on showing me. Mm-hmm. Mr. Jacob, he showed me how to use a drill motor. He showed me how to measure. Because I only went to the fifth grade, and I had to learn the hard way. And he showed me how to measure the holes for what size of rivets to use. And then he would take me to the crib and show me where the rivets were at and how to go to find out the sizes of the rivets. That little old man showed me everything that I know today in an aircraft is from that old man. Then they separate us. I cried that when they separated. Oh, they separated. But then he was sent to Lomita because they had built up a plant at Lomita. I met him afterwards, later on, years after, I think, when the Iran contract, Douglas had an Iran contract, and they were closing the line. They didn't want to lay me off. They always sent me from Santa Monica to Torrance, from Torrance to Lomita, just in Douglas, and just going around till the last big contract in 51. And, excuse me. That's where I met Mr. Jacob back then. And he says, oh, he said, Rolling Stones meet again. He says, I'm glad you come back. And he hugged me, and he introduced me to his wife then. His wife was working with me. Very good friends. And then we were transferred here to Douglas. And Miss Jacob came, and her and I worked there for a long time together. Mm-hmm. And that was on the 124. B-124. We worked together until the line, that was the end of the B-24s. So then we went on the B and the RB. Then they had a great big layoff. Then I was sent back to small parts at Lomita, which I worked on the bench very short time. I think it was about 6 months. And I came back to Douglas. And I got through the RB and the B, and then the 8, DC-8, mm-hmm. until the 8 went out, and the 9 came in. I landed on the 9, and I think I built the 4-2 first ships on the 10, DC-10. Mm-hmm.
Did you always do the same kind of work?
No, everything was different. Like being an assembler, like a station mechanic. Mechanical. Once you go in the plant to work, you punch in, go to your job, open your tools, have everything ready when the whistle blows. Maybe that morning the foreman had the lead had a list, because the foreman gave it to the lead. They would send me to the fuselage. Maybe I was shooting the skin together from around the ship. Maybe the whole line. A lot of times I would put intertossels, which the intertossels, that means there's the skin, and then there's a piece in between. So in case they have to repair something on the ship, they don't have to tear the whole ship to do it. They can open that door and get in. I would do that, or maybe somebody made a mess. I had to go and pick up, do a rework for them. I done everything, different things. Not the same thing every day, no.
But you always riveted?
Everything goes with rivet. Mm-hmm. Everything. Same, the only thing that no goes with rivet, even that, is the radio equipment. And that's got a little small rivet, but you can tap them with a hammer, a little soft rivet. But everything was rivets or hot guns. Drilling, milling, hucks, and working with a seal. two kinds of seal. First, there for a long time we used that black seal. It has an awful smell. And then later, the year about quitting, before I retired, about I think a year, I started using that light gray, which is awful strong too. What made me, a lot of time it would upset my stomach was NAK. It's a liquid, but you clean the material, so there won't be nothing in between when you put the parts together. You've had to clean that when the inspectors are, now for instance, there's something that inspectors won't buy, the market. Well, after we get through repairing it and they come and check it, and if they see it's all right, they'll call engineering. And there's four persons to check it. Mm-hmm. The lead, the inspector, the engineering, and the general foreman and system foreman have to check all that when there's ever repair before they can okay it to go down the line. And they have this NAK, which is very, very strong. A lot of those alcoholics would damp the rag and put on their nose and get drunk with it. A lot of times you see them passed out and they'd be laid off and kind of that. But it was very, very strong. I think that's what bothered my breathing mostly.
Now, when did you start working at Douglas Long Beach?
Steady.
Well, you said you went from downtown Los Angeles
to Douglas.
Santa Monica.
It's Douglas.
Right. And then when did you come to Long Beach? When the plant was open, is that what you said?
Uh-huh. When it first opened in 41.
And then how long did you stay there that time? I think you told me last time I worked,
stayed there until they had that big contract in San Diego. And the foreman came and says, Alicia says, we've been going through the books, and you have quite a bit of experience. How would you like to go as a lead? I said, I will not take lead job. He says, why? I said, too much responsibility. He said, all right. He said, would you like to go with the crew that's going up there? Yeah, I'll go. That's when I went over there and worked for a while at Consale until the contract was over.
Do you remember what year that was?
I was in 45. Right at the end of the war. They were finishing the contracts.
I see.
Consolidated had contracts from Douglas. They had contracts from North America. They had contracts from Boeing. That was a big plant. Very, very big plant. They had different contracts. So when they ever had a contract, what they would send their people.
So you worked in Long Beach from 41 till about 45 and then went down to San Diego.
Mm-hmm. And then I worked at Ryan, like I told you. Because the contract was finished there, and I had a little small contract over there, and I worked there for a while. Came back to Douglas in 51, worked steady. Well, which I worked steady all the time when I was laid off.
Where did you live in San Diego?
I lived in the housing project. Consolidated Aircraft had part of it. While you worked at the aircraft, you was allowed to live in one of those homes. Mm-hmm. It was on Hilltop Drive and 45th and Market. And then I came back and I left my family home over there, my mother and my children.
You left them in San Diego?
Uh-huh, until I came back, and because they had condemned our little house here because, nobody was living, you know how they destroy everything. So then we came back and I found a motel in Lakewood Boulevard. And I rented the Lakewood Boulevard and brought my children and my family there. Then I had a brother. My dad was getting sick. And then I found a real nice house in Lakewood, in Bellflower. And rented that house for, about a couple of years. That's when we had that Douglas strike, the big Douglas strike. At that time, my dad still was getting pretty sick. So my brother came in and said, Alicia says, there's a house, a real nice house that can be moved. And I can get it real reasonable for us. But we have to have somebody to co-sign. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, Dad can't do it because he's a sick man. Mother, she can't do it. He said, how about you? You got a job. He said, we're all on strike. The sand and gravel strike in 51. They were on strike. Douglas was in strike. Everybody was on strike. So I said, okay. I said, I can get the money because I'll go to pick a line where it takes me all day and all night to pick up to get the money for that place. So I went to sign for that house. And then my brothers moved us to the house. And we're back to the same place in Hawaii, guys.
And did your brother live with you, too? No.
After we were married and all that, no, they were all had their own home. But this one always did help me. He lives in Whittier. He's about the third one down the line. And he always was handy to helping me. And even at home, when he worked, he'd always manage to give him an extra dollar or two for my kids. You know, he always was real good. So he'd come and he'd say, you're the only one that we can see. Thank God. He says, Frank is still in the Army. He says, and Tony's in the Navy. He says, John is in the Navy. He says, we have no helping hand right now. I said, okay, I'll co-sign. I wanted to co-sign. My dad said, well, if you're going to co-sign, everything is yours. I said, no. I said, that's yours, Dad. So anyway, him and mother decided that I should keep the property in Hawaiian Gardens. But we moved that house. It's a nice little house. And then I rebuilt it. I put more rooms to it, made it bigger. Because when we moved, it was only had one, two small bedrooms, a real nice dining room and living room, and a nice kitchen, a little porch. And that was enough because when you have a big family. So I built another room in the back to please my mother. And yes, I always done something to keep her happy. She was so good to me. I always managed her to have a good time. She wanted another room, my sewing room. I said, okay. So I rebuilt that place. So I co-signed and I went to the union. I said, well, I need some money. I said, how much money do you need? I said, first thing, I don't have nothing at home to eat. I said, I've been in a picket line. I said, I got to have groceries. So they gave me a slip that you go to a store and you can get some liquor and cigarettes. They wouldn't allow that, but anything to eat. So I told how many children I had and my dad and mother. So I got a sticker. I went down to Bellflower. And Artesia used to be a great big store. It used to belong to a doctor in Bellflower. And I went there, I took it to him, he laughed. He said, well, what are you doing in the picket line? I said, you do more than being in the picket line, you need money. So that's how I got my first check to pay for that house to be moved. I had to have a permit, you know. And every time you move a wire, a line from the electric, you have to pay so much. And we removed this house from Bell to Hawaiian Gardens. And I lived in Hawaiian Gardens until I got sick. And then I was going back home. But this one here, my son-in-law went and got me, told me I should stay with him, rent the house out. But that kind of helped for my mother's out in the convalescent hospital. But I still got that problem.
Now, when was it that you moved that house?
In 51.
When
we had that. Mm-hmm. And we kept it up. I still keep it up. It looks nice, real nice.
I'd like to go back and ask you, when you first started working at the Long Beach plant
mm-hmm.
and started working in mechanical
mm-hmm.
things rather than in sewing,
uh-huh.
What that felt like, if what you thought it was going to be like for you.
Well, I felt silly, to tell you the truth, because it seemed that I was the only girl in the fuselage. And that little old man explained to me, he said, don't feel that way. There's a lot of women out here. He said, but then it just happened that you're out here in the line. And he said, you should be lucky you're in the line. I said, why? He said, because you have more chance of getting raise your wages than you would in a regular. So I felt kind of, I was afraid of the drill motor, to tell the truth. I was afraid to get electrocuted. At that year in 51, It was raining, I think you remember, way back, it was really raining, it was flooded all over. The water would come inside the plant. And I said, uh-oh, I wouldn't even touch that. And I get electrocuted. No, he said, you won't get electrocuted. He said, not this. And he'd show me, you know. And afterwards, it didn't bother me. I just felt like I'm doing a man's job. Like the foreman told me one time, he said, now you got a man's job, you do a man's job. Don't ask them to come and lift up your box, don't come and ask them to do nothing. They got their job, they got to do it. And said, you can't visit either. You can't smoke inside. And I said, that don't bother me. He said, no eating or drinking inside the ships. But lying dead. And it didn't bother me. I just worked like a lesson. I went in the ship, inside the ship, come outside the ship.
Now, during the war, did you do the riveting during the war?
Oh, yes.
As well as, okay, I was confused because you said 1951 that you were afraid of the drill motor.
Well, you have to drill, honey.
Right.
You have to make a hole.
Right.
All right, let's put it this way. You're building a part of a ship. You drill. You take it down and clean it up, burr it, what they call burring. You got to have a burring tool for that. A lot of times when it's titanium, you cannot use a burring tool on titanium because it's harder than iron. You have to use a file, certain kinds of file, and certain way to use that file so you won't hurt that material. Then when you got it all cleaned, I have to drill first and countersink them. If they were flush rivets, you got to countersink with the holes. You clean all that up, take everything apart, everything, every little bit, no matter what it is. Put it on the table. You burr it, you clean it up, you wash it, you kind of sweep where you had all that junk, all that material, dust and whatever, have it be nice and clean all the time. So you won't slip and hurt yourself. No rivets on the floor, nothing. When after everything is clean, the jig was clean, we put our parts back in the jig. We had to use the vice on them, a lot of times to grab them, to hold them while we use clecos, which clecos, you know what they are. If you put them in, like if it's something to hold like a safety pin. And we cleco them all up together, and we rivet the parts that didn't have no seal, but it seemed that my work was always with seal. Like, I always work in door jams, in doors, in the frames, they call door jams. I always worked on the windows. It seemed everything I'd done had seal. I never could get away from that seal. Then we put that first, after we cleaned it up and everything, the lead come and check it. Then the foreman, system foreman. Then they put in for sealers. Then in between, so we wouldn't be stalling, in between, where the parts that didn't have no sealing, we shoot them. Mm-hmm. And when the sealers came by, we stop and open them for them. And they put the seal, and then we put the parts right away. So, because you can't leave the seal open, and kind of the dust, not only that, it kind of gets sticky, and it won't hold. And then when you're going to shoot rivets, you'll have a little hump. And then so if you put them right away, you'll have no trouble. Well, when Bible, if we're through riveting and the sealers hasn't come, we start another panel, which we call a panel is of a part of the fuselage, the skin. We start drilling it, or what are we supposed to do? But everything had drilling, milling, shooting, first is drill, and if it's flush, countersink, then clean it up. First, and then if it's something that you think is not right, you look at the burr print, and it, still, if you doubt that that's not, you're going to get your lead. The lead will come and look, and if he doesn't know, he'll get somebody else. A lot of them lead, they were lead, but they didn't know any more than we did. they would get the general form, system for me, and they would go together on the blueprint. But a lot of times the ones that make the parts made a mistake on cutting, trimming them, or laying them out, a lot of little things like that. And now the material always has to have a space in between. They can't be flushed together. They have to always have a little space. A lot of times we had to file the edges so it'd be even with the other one, so it'd be neat. And there would be no put together, because if they get together, they can crack. The aluminum, it cracks just like if it was a piece of paper. And once you have a little scratch, that scratch can cause an accident on a plane, on an airplane flying or something like that. I made that plane, I put that door in that DC-8 that lost it, went door in the back, and out there flying. And they called me to the office over that. But then later on they came back and apologized, because they said it was the man that didn't know how to read and didn't understand the instructions how to close the door. He didn't close it like he should have. And when he started flying, the door slapped open. That got me kind of nervous afterwards. But we had a check, and that's the reason I wasn't afraid, because when I knew that thing wasn't right, I would not touch it. And then we had a little stamp. All your work is stamped. So they can go way back and find out who done that. That's the reason the foreman used to say, always be sure nobody else took your stamp. Or they'll never loan it to nobody else. Because with that stamp, they went to check it away from where that door was started. Then they came and talked to Barbie and talked to me, the both of them workers. And then that afternoon, I think the word came back and the foreman came and apologized that it was an Englishman that didn't know how to read.
Do you remember what it was like for you the first day that you walked into the Long Beach plant to go to work on the line?
Well, I saw those great big old things. I never imagined I was going to work on those big ones. Never, never. When they put me on top of the ship and looked down, I thought, well, one of these things, and that's right down, I had it. And because I always did work on top or inside over here. I don't know how I got that kind of a job, but I would look over here. And to me, I couldn't figure out, because see, you got one line which is all complete. Now we're talking about the only fuse line now. They have a line which only the wings. They have a line which is just the nose. Another line where they just where they put the propeller. So when I landed, was that great big fuse line on that B-24. I looked at that thing going to the other. That looked awful big to me. I was just stunned, because everything I knew was small parts. But afterwards, it didn't bother me. And I liked my work. I really enjoyed my work.
When you were working, sewing in the parachute shop, what did you wear to work?
Oh, that was the best one. We had to have a hat. It was a uniform we had. Excuse me. Our blouses was not supposed to be tight, loose. Nothing, no earrings, no rings. We had to wear safety shoes. It was just like uniform. Ours were blue, dark blue, at Douglas. And they looked neat, but all your clothes had to go to the cleaner. so that was kind of expensive. Then later on they started letting us overalls and what have you. Or then we didn't have to wear those hats, we wear a hairnet, and then one of those, if we worked in the fuse like I did, we had to use those safety hats like the men wears out in the field. But at the beginning, even from the beginning, we had to use those. And then a lot of the boys wore those muffins for their ears, you know, but I couldn't wear them. Because my job was always, like I say, inside of a ship or putting parts, and I had to stick my head in between the skin and the, you see, a ship's got two skins. Put it in my head like that to shoot hooks. Well, you can't have